The sermon title today is taken from the hymn we'll be singing in a little while. And the first verse of that hymn says, "When hands reach out beyond divides, and hope is truly found, each chain of hate will fall away, and bells of peace shall sound." I'm suggesting that a large part of our calling as followers of Jesus is to engage in a vocation beyond divides. Peter and Andrew, James and John, the protagonists in our gospel reading today, had no idea what they were in for. They got a small hint in the words that Jesus spoke to them. "Come, follow me, and we'll do our fishing in the realm of human creatures rather than the realm of sea creatures." They were going to operate on the other side of the divide between fishers and non-fishers. And on that other side, they would be crossing many more divides as well. But they had no idea. Perhaps they should have had some idea, because their faith tradition had plenty of lessons about vocations that took persons beyond divides. The book of the prophet Jonah is built around one of those lessons. A crazy little story, really, about a reluctant prophet who was called to speak a word from God to the people of Nineveh, the capital city of an empire that was the great enemy of Jonah's own people. Talk about crossing a divide. Jonah would have none of it and planned an escape route via a ship in the Mediterranean, which was sailing due west as far as possible from the evil empire in the east. You know the story, right? The story of Jonah. There was a storm at sea, of course. The ship survived the storm, but those on board soon figured out that our disobedient Jonah had provoked the wrath of the powers that be, thereby bringing on the storm, and so Jonah was thrown overboard. As in any fine story, our hero is then miraculously rescued, in this case by a giant fish who swallows Jonah, swims directly eastward, and spits Jonah up on the beach, left with little alternative but to get back on his feet and head to the east after all. Upon arriving in Nineveh, Jonah reluctantly delivers the message from God, urging the Ninevites to repent from their evil ways. Jonah is pretty sure that isn't going to happen, and he finds a bit of solace in the thought that he will get to see divine retribution inflicted on the unrepentant Ninevites. So he settles into a comfortable spot to watch the judgment unfold. However, as we heard in our reading today, the Ninevites turned out to be not so bad after all. God got on quite all right with them. Jonah then goes into a self-righteous rage, which does not get resolved by the end of the story. Jonah's foolishness is plain to see. And we're left with the question, of course, you wouldn't be that foolish, would you? You're not going to write off everyone on the other side of the divide, are you? You will be sensitive to God at work beyond the divides, won't you? The story of Jonah is included intentionally in the Hebrew Bible as an antidote to national pride, communal self-righteousness, denominational presumptuousness, whatever you want to call it. And this corrective theme is often found in the Hebrew Bible. The story of Ruth is another example. Ruth, from the nation of Moab, another major enemy of Israel, is the revered grandmother of King David, and therefore a key ancestor in the royal lineage. The Gospel of Matthew even makes mention of Ruth in listing the ancestors of Jesus. The message is clear. Don't discount the people on the other side. Don't think God is not at work beyond the divides. So our fisher friends might have had an inkling of what was to come in their adventures with Jesus, though it seems that later they were mightily surprised when Jesus invited them to love their enemies and to build community with tax collectors and prostitutes. Now, the terms tax collectors and prostitutes, of course, are common stereotypes used in the Gospels to denote persons outside of the acceptable mainstream of the religious culture in which Jesus operated. And from the point of view within that culture, the tax collectors and prostitutes were, of course, on the outside, on the other side of the divide between dominant and aberrant norms. When religion comes into play in such a scenario, there's usually an assumption that God operates in the dominant and proper side, while the other side is the domain of the forces of evil. And along with this assumption, we often get corollary assumptions, not the least of which assumes that if we are on the good side of the divide, our job is to go to the other side and take God into that God-forsaken space. Maybe that is what we have in mind when we sing, "When hands reach out beyond divides." And it appears that Jonah had this in mind when he went to Nineveh to take God's message to that heathen city. And maybe Christians think that Jesus had this in mind when the fisher disciples were invited to go and fish for people. But as I've already suggested, Jonah and those disciples were in for a big surprise. And I think we might be in for some big surprises when we reach out beyond divides as well. Jonah's big surprise, of course, was that the Ninevites were very amenable to the movement of God's Spirit in their midst. God was right at home with them, if you will. In fact, when we listen to the story carefully, we see that from God's point of view, Jonah was a much tougher nut to crack than those supposedly wicked people of Nineveh. The disciples, too, were surprised again and again by the spiritual sensitivity and proclivity of the folk that they would have written off, folk beyond the divides, in whom Jesus had a passionate interest and a determined confidence. It was almost as if those folks were better Christians, so to speak, than they were. Jesus knew something about those people and those places beyond the divides. Jesus knew that God was at work, already at work among those people and in those places. Jesus understood that a vocation to fish or to farm or to teach or to heal or to practice whatever skills we might have on the other side of any divide is a vocation to go and discover the reign of God in unexpected ways, in unexpected places, among persons from whom we will learn much more than we could ever expect to teach them. Now, I happen to believe that this surprise is the essence of what we call the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that, of course, is just my opinion, although I think it has been reinforced many times by experience, and I'd like to share a little bit of that experience with you. And some of you may have heard some of this before, so bear with me. I do think these stories of mine reflect experiences beyond divides. Early in my ministry, Allison and I spent 6 or 7 years working in rural Kenya with an indigenous African church. And in keeping with the missiology of the time, we went there as resource persons to share our expertise with the presumably less educated and less developed Africans. When we first arrived, we were taken into the office of one of the elders of the local church, who surprised us greatly by saying to us, "Don't think that you have come here to help us." As time went by, we literally thanked God for that early warning and the wisdom of our newfound mentors and friends there in Africa. How could we ever have thought that we had anything relevant to bring from Canada to the people of rural Kenya? Instead, we discovered that when we managed to be humble and open to the Spirit of God, already very much present, we could work together with our African partners in the many wonderful initiatives of the churches, schools, and village projects in which we were participating. Now, in the meantime, we, as parents, were trying to raise 4 children. Talk about another divide, the one between parents and children. I think that early on, I had a rather naive idea that children were like blank slates. Might have even heard that somewhere in the wisdom of our culture. Children were like blank slates or unmolded clay that could be shaped by parents into the model human specimens that we parents might think they were meant to be. We'd be able to teach them all the right stuff, shape their behavior, set them on the perfect path, but we were in for some surprises. Something was happening on that other side of the divide, and we parents learned that if we could let go of some of our agenda and be open to discover with our children who, in fact, they were in their own God-given right, we would be a whole lot further ahead. Speaking of divides in family, there are, of course, also some things that could be said about the divide between spouses, but that would take us into the realm of what the young people call TMI. Too much information. So I'm not going to go there, other than to say that after 40 years, I still have a lot to learn in that department. Now, to make these long stories a little shorter, there are divides between teachers and students, between white collars and blue collars, and gray collars and green collars, divides between homosexuals and heterosexuals and bisexuals and transgendered and queers of other sorts. There are divides between rich and poor, between different nationalities, religions, social and political ideologies. The list goes on and on. But if I have a place on one side of one of those divides, especially if it's on the dominant side, and if I claim allegiance with Jesus in reaching out beyond the divides, I had better be ready for surprises. I'd better be ready to see God at work on the other side. I'd better be ready to let go of my own agenda and learn something profound, something new. So what are some of the divides that we're dealing with in our current here and now? And of course, there are many, many possible examples. We might consider just a few. We've certainly been aware of a great divide in our city in recent times. And in this case, I think that people on both sides have had to search for grace and wisdom on the other side. And I do believe that we witness a bit of a breakthrough this past week, although there is still a whole lot of work to do. And this real-life example, of course, also points to the fact that crossing divides can be extremely, extremely challenging. along with instances of God at work on the other side, will also run up against formidable obstacles and opposition. And of course, that is exactly what happened with Jesus as well. In the experience of Jesus, who faced tremendous obstacles and was nevertheless absolutely bound and determined to keep on discovering the reign of God on that other wonderful but very precarious side. In our individual lives, we continue to face divides in personal relationships, in our places of work, even in our church communities. And again, it takes courage and wisdom and determination to discover how God might be at work on the other side. We're approaching a major divide in the life of our congregation. We're facing a transition with an unknown new norm on the other side. And as that new norm takes shape through the conversations that we're having now, through the decisions that will be made at the annual meeting and beyond, we will all need new ways of seeing things in order to discover God at work in unfamiliar territory. But we can be sure that if we step out in good faith across the divide, that we will discover something wonderful on the other side. Now, there's one other divide that I might mention, a divide that each of us will face someday, and a divide that is often mentioned in the Bible, and that is the divide between life and death. We all wonder if there is anything at all on the other side, and none of us can be sure of anything in this regard. But a lifetime of experience beyond divides ought to give us a bit of a clue. And that is exactly what followers of Jesus base their thinking on when it comes to that big question of what there might be for us on the other side of death. If we have found God at work beyond all the other divides, we will find God at work beyond that one as well. So let us not hesitate to take up our vocation beyond divides. It is there that hope is found. It is there that we discover the kingdom. It is there that we will know abundant life in all its fullness. Thanks be to God. Amen.